This is a true crime in real time update from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Today, we're diving into one of the most haunting and heart-wrenching cases to come out of small-town America, the Delphi murders. Two teenage girls, Liberty German and Abigail Williams, were brutally killed in 2017 while hiking on a trail just outside their close-knit Indiana community. For years, this case has been shrouded in mystery, frustration, and grief. And now, just as the long-awaited trial against Richard Allen begins, his defense team has dropped a bombshell. Imagine this. Tucked into the hand of Abby Williams, investigators found a strand of hair, a piece of evidence never before mentioned publicly. But here's the twist. That hair, according to Allen's attorneys, doesn't belong to him. That revelation changes everything. If it's not his, then whose is it? And why wasn't it investigated more closely? It's a development that raises serious questions, not just about the case itself, but about the investigation that led to Allen's arrest. Stay with us as we peel back the layers of this deeply unsettling story, because what lies beneath may change the way you think about justice, in this case forever. The town of Delphi, Indiana, is the kind of place where everyone knows everyone. A quiet community of about 3,000 people. It seemed like the perfect backdrop for two young girls, best friends Abigail Williams and Liberty German, to explore the outdoors on a mild February afternoon in 2017. The two girls headed out along the Monon High Bridge Trail, a local hiking spot, planning to snap photos and enjoy the scenery. At 2:07 p.m., Libby captured what would become a tragic and chilling image. Her friend Abby walking along the bridge, the structure's weathered beams stretching into the distance. What happened next would leave the entire town of Delphi and the nation reeling. At 2:14 p.m., just 7 minutes after that photo was taken, authorities believe the girls were abducted. 18 minutes later, their lives were tragically cut short. The next day, their bodies were discovered along the trail, carefully staged with branches placed over them and Abby wearing some of Libby's clothing. It wasn't just a murder. It felt calculated, almost ritualistic. For years, investigators scrambled to piece together what happened. The evidence included a haunting video from Libby's phone, a grainy clip of a man now infamously known as Bridge Guy, walking across the abandoned bridge toward the girls. In the video, the man is heard saying, "Guys, down the hill," in a flat, unsettling tone. The implication was clear. The girls had encountered their killer and recorded a fragment of what would be their final moments. Adding to the eerie nature of the recording, one of the girls could be heard whispering the word "gun" just before the clip ends. For more than 5 years, the identity of the bridge guy remained a mystery, despite composite sketches and thousands of tips flooding into police. It wasn't until 2022, years after the murders, that law enforcement made an unexpected breakthrough. Richard Allen, a man who lived just minutes away from where the bodies were discovered, was arrested and charged with the murders. Allen's connection to the case wasn't new. He had even spoken with police shortly after the killings, admitting he'd been on the trail that day. But his name had somehow slipped through the cracks during the initial investigation. Allen's arrest was based on a piece of physical evidence that prosecutors claimed linked him directly to the crime scene, an unspent bullet found near the girls' bodies. Ballistic tests suggested the bullet came from a gun owned by Allen. It was a promising lead for investigators and a devastating revelation for the community. Delphi residents hoped that finally, after years of questions and fear, justice would be served. But as jury selection for Allen's trial got underway, his defense team unleashed a shocking new revelation that threatened to upend everything. A strand of hair found in the hand of Abby Williams did not match Richard Allen's DNA. The defense didn't specify whose hair it was, only that it wasn't their client's. For the first time since Allen's arrest, there was now a glaring inconsistency in the prosecution's narrative, one that raised a troubling possibility. If the hair didn't belong to Allen, could someone else have been responsible for the murders? This revelation adds another layer of complexity to an already convoluted case. How could such a critical piece of evidence, DNA found in a victim's hand, be overlooked for so long? Was it an oversight, a mistake, or something more deliberate? The defense wasted no time pointing to the hair as proof that Allen might not be the perpetrator after all. Their message to the court was clear. The wrong man could be on trial for one of Indiana's most infamous crimes. But the bombshells didn't stop there. Allen's legal team also suggested that his alleged confessions, more than 60 admissions made to his wife and mother during phone calls, were the result of a man suffering from severe mental illness. Allen had been held in isolation at the Westville Correctional Facility for his own protection, but his attorneys argued that the mental toll of solitary confinement had driven him to delusion. According to them, these confessions were the desperate ramblings of a broken man, not reliable evidence of guilt. As the trial unfolded, the defense and prosecution clashed over what the jury would be allowed to see and hear. One of the most contentious battles revolved around the sketches of the suspect known as Bridge Guy. The prosecution argued that these early sketches, drawn from witness descriptions, were no longer relevant to the case. The 2017 and 2019 sketches portrayed two very different individuals, one with a beard and older features, and the other showing a younger man with curly hair. Prosecutors worried the inconsistent sketches would confuse the jury. The defense, however, saw the sketches as an opportunity to poke holes in the prosecution's case, demonstrating how unreliable early witness accounts can be. And then there was the bullet. The unspent round found near the crime scene, which prosecutors had linked to Allen's firearm, was initially considered a smoking gun, so to speak. But now, with the new revelation about the hair, the defense was preparing to argue that the bullet alone wasn't enough to convict their client. After all, if a key piece of physical evidence like a hair didn't belong to Allen, how could the jury trust that the bullet was definitive proof of his involvement? The stakes were growing by the minute. Allen's trial wasn't just about determining guilt or innocence. It was about solving a mystery that had haunted Delphi for years. Could it be that investigators had rushed to pin the murders on Allen, eager to close the case after years of frustration? Or was the hair simply a red herring, an irrelevant detail being blown out of proportion by a defense team grasping at straws? Meanwhile, the prosecution was doubling down on its argument that Allen was the man responsible. They pointed to his own words, those 60 confessions, as evidence of his guilt. Indiana State Police Detective Brian Harshman testified that Allen had provided specific details about the crime that only the killer could know. But even with these alleged confessions, the question lingered. If the hair wasn't Allen's, whose was it? And what else might have been missed along the way? The trial is shaping up to be a battle not just over evidence, but over narrative. On one side, the prosecution argues that Allen is the man caught in Libby's final video, the bridge guy who lured the girls to their deaths. On the other side, the defense insists that Allen's confessions are the product of mental illness, and that the physical evidence doesn't add up. And hanging over everything is the community's desperate need for closure after nearly 7 years of waiting for justice. The outcome of this case will hinge on how the jury interprets the evidence, or the lack thereof. The trial has only just begun, and already the twists and turns are raising more questions than answers. If Richard Allen isn't the killer, the people of Delphi are left with a chilling realization. The real murderer could still be out there, waiting to strike again. The courtroom battles are far from over, and with every passing day, new questions emerge that seem to blur the line between truth and speculation. Richard Allen's defense team is banking on the idea that doubt, just enough of it, will sway the jury. And doubt, it seems, is starting to take root. If the hair found in Abby Williams' hand doesn't match Allen's DNA, who does it belong to? The defense leans heavily on this question, suggesting that investigators were so eager to pin the murders on Allen that they may have overlooked crucial leads. The defense continues to push another argument that Allen's confessions, the ones prosecutors are touting as a centerpiece of their case, are unreliable. After Allen's arrest, he was transferred from a county jail to the Westville Correctional Facility, where he was placed in isolation for his own safety. But isolation can have devastating effects on the mind. His attorneys argue that his repeated confessions, more than 60 of them given during phone calls to his wife and mother, are the ravings of a man deteriorating mentally. They describe Allen as a man in the grip of a grave mental illness, saying his mind had fractured under the weight of solitary confinement. Could a man in that state really be trusted to confess with clarity, or were his words merely the desperate attempts of a broken spirit to make sense of a nightmare? Meanwhile, the prosecution isn't budging. They point to the sheer volume of Allen's confessions and the specific details he allegedly provided, details that were never made public. They argue that his admissions aren't the product of delusion, but of guilt. According to Indiana State Police Detective Brian Harshman, Allen described aspects of the crime scene that only someone present at the murders could know. Yet, the defense counters, if the hair isn't Allen's, could those details have come from someone else? Perhaps someone Allen is protecting, or worse, could Allen be taking the blame for a crime he didn't commit? As if the trial wasn't complicated enough, the defense has alluded to an alternate theory, that the murders were part of a ritualistic killing connected to an Odinist cult. The idea is controversial and inflammatory, and it won't be heard by the jury. Judge Francis Gull ruled that there was no evidence to support the theory, and allowing it into court would only confuse the jury. The defense, however, sees the exclusion of this theory as another example of how the investigation was mishandled. Were the investigators too quick to focus on Allen and dismiss other potential leads? Adding to the confusion is the battle over the now infamous composite sketches of B. Bridge Guy. Two sketches released 2 years apart depict very different individuals. The 2017 sketch shows an older man with a beard, hoodie, and hat, while the 2019 sketch depicts a younger man with curly hair. The prosecution has argued that these sketches, created from witness accounts, are irrelevant. They didn't lead to Allen's arrest, and the witnesses wouldn't be able to positively identify Allen in court, but the defense wants the jury to see those sketches. They plan to argue that if the witnesses couldn't agree on a description of the suspect, how reliable is any of the evidence pointing to Allen? The battle over these sketches represents a larger issue in this trial, the reliability of memory and evidence. With so many twists and turns in the investigation, the jury will have to decide which narrative they believe. Was Allen the bridge guy? The man caught on camera giving chilling instructions to the girls? Or is he a scapegoat, a convenient suspect in a case desperate for resolution? The prosecution's narrative rests heavily on the unspent bullet found near the crime scene, a bullet linked to a gun owned by Allen. Prosecutors argue that this bullet ties Allen directly to the murders. But the defense is working hard to undermine that narrative, suggesting that the presence of a single bullet is hardly conclusive proof of guilt. After all, they argue, if such an important piece of evidence like the hair doesn't belong to Allen, what else might have been overlooked? The bullet, they say, is just one piece of a puzzle that doesn't fit together the way the prosecution claims it does. And then there's the question that haunts the entire case. If not Allen, then who? If the DNA found in Abby's hand belongs to someone else, where is that person now? Could it be that someone else, perhaps someone still living in or around Delphi, committed the murders and remains free? It's a terrifying possibility, one that the defense seems intent on planting in the minds of the jurors, but it's also a possibility that could devastate a community already shattered by years of unanswered questions. The trial will force the people of Delphi to relive the darkest moments of their lives. Family members, neighbors, and friends of Abby and Libby will be called to testify, revisiting memories that they've tried to bury. The media frenzy surrounding the trial ensures that every detail will be scrutinized, every development dissected. And for the people of Delphi, the pain will only deepen if the trial ends without clear answers. As the trial moves forward, the jury faces a daunting task. They must decide whether the evidence against Richard Allen is enough to convict him beyond a reasonable doubt. The confessions, the bullet, the grainy video, all of these pieces must be weighed against the new revelations about the hair and the mishandling of early witness statements. In the end, it may not come down to the quantity of the evidence, but to its quality. Can the prosecution convince the jury that despite the inconsistencies, Allen is guilty? Or will the defense's narrative of doubt be enough to set him free? And what happens if Allen is acquitted? The questions won't stop. The community will be left wondering if the real killer has been among them all along. Will the case remain open? Or will it become another cold case? An unsolved mystery haunting Delphi for decades to come? The story of the Delphi murders is more than just a courtroom drama. It's a story about the search for truth in the face of overwhelming grief, about a community's desperate need for justice, and about the lengths people will go to protect those they love. As the trial continues, all eyes will be on the courtroom. But the real impact of this case will be felt far beyond the verdict. If Richard Allen is found guilty, the people of Delphi may finally have some sense of closure, though it will never fill the void left by the loss of Abby and Libby. But if Allen walks free, the questions will only grow louder. Who killed Abby and Libby? And will justice ever be served? And so, we are left with more questions than answers. Richard Allen sits in a courtroom accused of one of the most disturbing crimes in recent memory, but as new revelations come to light, it feels as if the ground beneath this case keeps shifting. A hair that doesn't match his DNA, composite sketches that don't seem to align, and a string of confessions now clouded by questions of mental illness. What we thought we knew has become a tangled web of possibilities, and the clock is ticking as the jury prepares to decide whether the right man is on trial. But the stakes here are so much bigger than just this one trial. If Allen is guilty, justice will have been served, at least in part, but even that can't erase the pain left behind for the families of Abby and Libby, or the trauma that has reverberated through the Delphi community. If Allen is innocent, the nightmare only deepens. The realization that a killer could still be out there, free to walk among the very people who have spent years haunted by these murders, would be a devastating blow to those seeking justice. It's a delicate dance between evidence and narrative, between guilt and doubt, and it's a reminder of how fragile justice can be when so much is left unanswered. Will this trial bring closure, or will it only raise more questions? One thing is certain, however this story ends, the people of Delphi and all of us watching will be left to ponder the same unsettling question: what if we still don't know the whole truth? I'm Tony Bruschi. Press subscribe to stay with us as we continue to follow this case and many others that challenge the way we think about justice. Thank you for listening.
Strap in and get ready to go back in time. Gen X Time Machine is here to transport you back to the glorious days of neon, big hair, and cassette tapes that always needed rewinding.
To figure out where Tupperware, like, went wrong, we kind of got to start at the beginning.
Remember when MTV actually played music videos? Or when lunch wasn't complete without Dunkaroos? Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit like trying to recapture the magic of a bygone era.
Yeah. We're diving into all that and more. So if you want to relive the 80s and 90s in all their retro glory, hit up Gen X Time Machine wherever you get your podcasts.
VHS is looking like the obvious winner, right?
Oh, and don't forget the rise of the video rental store, remember?
Subscribe, because who doesn't need another excuse to avoid adulting? You're welcome, the Gen X Time Machine.